The show is live and local. It's your local performance connection. I'm Kevin Kelly, and I want to add my voice to Vic DiGeronimo's and others to say thanks for all who supported us during this just completed, as a matter of in a matter of minutes, the fall pledge period. We're very grateful to everybody who finds that what we do here is sufficiently important to you that it's worth your financial contributions. Our program today will include a conversation coming up in the second half of the show with Stephen Larson, who's the music director of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra. They're giving a concert Friday night. I think I said may have said Saturday when I was talking with Vic earlier. Friday night at the Krannert Center in Urbana, that's called Variations on a Theme. And there's very good reason why it's called that. We'll hear all the details and some samples of some of the music, of course. In the first half of the show, I'll be talking with members of the cast and crew of Red Mask Players' production of Arthur Miller's drama All My Sons. That opens next week. It runs the 4th of November through the 19th at the Catherine Randall Theater, and we'll have a couple of live scenes as a preview for that production. Hope you'll stay with us here on Live and Local. We just heard Frank Vignola and his trio in their adaptation of a song by Sting called Walking on the Moon. And this comes from Frank Vignola's CD called Looking Up. And his trio consists, of course, of himself on lead guitar. Vinny Raniolo is the rhythm guitarist and Gary Mazzaropi is the bass player. And heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, I'm Kevin Kelly. Our first segment today focuses on Red Mask Players in Danville at the Catherine Randall Theater. Next week, they're opening their next production, which is called All My Sons, a drama by Arthur Miller. And it runs from November 4th through the 19th. That's 3 weekends worth of performances. And there are roles, it says here, for 6 men and 4 women, and we have 4 folks with us on the show today to give us a little bit of a sample. Nancy Henderson, Sonny, and Dave Downing, and Gail Garner, thank you all very much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
So who's in charge of this operation here?
David is the director.
I'm the director.
You say that with such reluctance. Did they have to twist your arm to direct this show?
Well, not yet, but we're getting close.
No. What, no, they'll have to twist your arm to continue? That's a little. I don't think your cast wants to hear that. It's a little disturbing.
I'm the director, and this good friend sitting next to me, Mr. Garner, is my right-hand man, so to speak. He is my stage manager. And my brother Sonny is the lead, Joe Keller, and Nancy plays his wife, Kate.
And what made you pick, if you were the one who picked, All My Sons?
Well, actually, the Red Mask Board picked the shows for this season, and they're doing a reflection, I guess you could say, on 75 years of theater. This is their 75th season. And so they picked 3 shows from the previous 75, and they picked, this is the show, All My Sons, is from the first 25.
Wow.
And then they're doing, the next show is The Girls in 509, and it's a very lighthearted comedy. And then the last show is Neil Simon's Rumors.
Which is also a comedy, I'm
yes.
sure. So this one, however, not a comedy.
No, it's not.
You say that with a certain amount of emphasis.
Well, there is a little bit of comedy in it, and we're trying to push the comedy because it's such a serious show. But it's one of the best shows that I've ever read.
Really?
It's very good.
It's not one that I have known about myself, I don't think. I have a feeling it's one of those that's sort of in the theater lexicon somewhere, and I'm just out of it.
It is, and it's by Arthur Miller, and of course he wrote The Crucible and Death of a Salesman.
Those are the two that I've read.
And this is the one that most people don't know much about, but it's an excellent, excellent mm-hmm. show. Mm-hmm. It's about family and love and relationships and dealing with loss and with guilt. And it's a heavy show, but I've got an absolutely wonderful cast.
You just about covered all the topics of life.
It pretty well does.
It pretty
I
much
think people
does.
Will go away feeling satisfied, even though it's
yes.
been an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah there, it reminds hope. Yeah, kind of reminds me of Mice and Men, in that there is humor in it. If you've seen of Mice and Men, there are aspects of humor. There's times you're laughing, and then it just keeps building, and then the end is very powerful. And this is very similar to that. You follow this family and the development of relationships and things, and there are light moments, as there are in any family. And the play continues to build to the very end, and then you have this very dramatic ending. So it's an excellent play, and it's really a lot of fun.
So can you give us a little more specifics on what actually happens?
Nancy, I'm going to let you do this.
Oh, you don't know. Well, the Kellers are a family of mother and father and two sons, and this takes place in 1947 after World War II, and both of our sons served in the military. Our older son was in the, ground troops. He was in the Army, and our younger son was a pilot, and he has been lost. He's missing. We don't know. Whether he was killed or not. He's been missing for 3.5 years. And this takes place when his girlfriend is coming to visit, and the older son has invited her. And my character, the mother, is just not able to let go. And she still believes that he may be coming back. And that's how it all
You can't
begins.
Accept it.
Yeah. I mm-hmm.
cannot accept it.
Cannot. Yeah.
Well, not too many people can.
Yeah. The idea that, well, the fact that he's never been found or anything, it's, there's always that bit of hope, and she's always reading about men that have been found after years, and so she continues to hold out hope, When the almost future daughter-in-law comes to visit, it brings all of this back, and the emotions come back up, and all of the things that she went through before are happening to her again. It's very mm-hmm. difficult.
And of course, it's this is a situation that is unfortunately not uncommon.
Right.
It seems particularly,
people can probably relate to it now even more with all the conflicts and that, we are involved in this country, and people losing children. And I have two sons myself, so I can really relate to this character, how I would feel if I lost one of my sons and I didn't know, there's no closure. You don't know. So,
unless there is closure. Well, yeah. I mean, that actually leads to a question. How much do either of you draw on your personal experience to create the character?
I don't know. They make it sound so interesting. It makes me want to attend.
Well, you'll be there, won't you?
Yeah, I hope so. One other thing I'll add, the story kind of revolves around the family business, which Joe Keller is, I describe him as a blue-collar businessman. He grew up on the street, so he's street smart, but he's also pretty intelligent, and he puts together this machine shop which manufactures cylinder heads for P-40 aircraft in World War II. And it kind of revolves around the business, because he gets the one son involved in the business because he built the business for the son to take over. That's what he really wants to happen. So he's focused on the son that came back from the Army. And but the show is so much directed toward the one who was lost as a fighter pilot. and missing, and so the whole thing it's just family revolving around the business, revolving around the unknown fate of the one son, and it's really moving.
So again, how do you draw on your own experience? Do you draw on your own experience to create these characters?
I have three sons, and I've never, thank God, lost a son. But I had my youngest son did a tour of duty in Iraq, and it was probably the worst 6 months of my life. And so I can relate to that to a certain degree. But as far as actually losing a child, as a parent, I can't think of anything that would be worse than that.
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I can't
either.
That's
what.
Fortunately, none of us have had to go through this. Our family did experience a loss when I was a very young, and he was just a baby. We lost an older sister, so we saw a family break up as a result of that. You know, the loss was so great that our parents just never could get that bond back together of family. You know. Between the two of them, I believe, but you know that is something you live with, and you think about your older sibling. How would she have turned out? You know, so we've had a little bit of that, but none of us have personally lost our children.
Probably so. My closest experience. About a week before I was married, my uncle was killed in an accident, and my aunt. I said, should we postpone? And my aunt said, no, he would want you to go ahead and do this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And my grandparents came to my wedding, and I don't know how they did it, where you have to, you know, you're going through such an unbelievable loss and yet still having to go on with all of the other things in life. And, you know, they didn't want me to you know, put off that. And so it was sort of a bittersweet kind of thing.
So I think you guys have brought along a couple of scenes, one or two scenes from the show.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
And we're talking about Arthur Miller's play All My Sons, which is being put on by the Red Mask Players in Danville at the Catherine Randolph Theater. Opens next Friday and runs through the 19th, so 3 weekends worth of performances. And we have with us Nancy Henderson in the role of Kate Keller, Sonny Downing in the role of Joel Keller, and director of the show, Dave Downing, and Gail Gunner also is the stage manager. And is everybody taking a part here?
We're going to start on 16?
Yeah,
okay,
that's
I'll
fine.
Be Chris.
And yeah.
Would you like to do a part?
I would not.
All right.
Set it up, Gail. Set the scene.
Okay. Let's just do page 16 where we start with where Mom comes in.
She's the father and the son have been talking, Mom is coming in, and this is kind of, it starts out a lighthearted thing. Joe has...
Chris and his father, Joe, have been having kind of an argument. Chris is wanting to marry his brother's girlfriend, his brother Larry, who is missing. And Joe and Chris have been kind of arguing about it, and Mother comes in, and the whole tone of the things change.
To set the scene, the whole show takes place in the Keller's backyard. So you have yard furniture, you have a fence on either side where neighbors are, which are the other people in the cast. But the set is basically the back of his two-story house. So Mother comes out of the house.
Hello, Mom.
Joe, did you take a bag from under the sink?
Yeah, I put it in the garbage.
Well, get it out of the garbage. That's my potatoes.
I thought it was garbage.
Well, you do me a favor, Joe. Don't be helpful.
I can afford another bag of potatoes.
Now, Minnie scoured that pail in boiling water last night. It's cleaner than your teeth.
And I don't understand why, after I worked 40 years and I got a maid, why I have to take out the garbage.
If you would make up your mind that every bag in the kitchen isn't full of garbage, you wouldn't be throwing out all my vegetables. Last time it was the onions.
I don't like garbage in the house.
Then don't eat.
Well, that settles you for today, Dad.
Yeah, I'm in last place again. I don't know. Once upon a time when I thought I could, I had money again, I could hire a maid and my wife could take it easy. Now I got money again, I got a maid, and my wife is working for the maid.
It's her day off. What are you crabbing about?
Isn't Annie finished eating?
Oh, she'll be right out. The wind did some job on this place. So much for that, thank God.
Sit down. Take it easy.
I've got such a funny pain on the top of my head.
Let's stop there, because okay. We don't want to give away some of it.
All right.
Yeah, that's the thing about drama. You can take a little turn anywhere, and then...
Yes. It was just getting ready to take one of those very dramatic turns.
So is this fairly early in the show?
Yes.
Yes.
So?
Yes. Act one,
And then we thought we'd do something from Act 3.
Do you want to go like 62, 63?
Mm-hmm. You're not going to let me do Jim, huh?
Well, then let's go to
That's a good. That's a good scene.
Where are we starting?
Top of 60.
Start of Act 3.
This is the beginning of Act 3. It's 2 in the morning.
And do we need to know any of the intervening events without giving everything away?
Chris, there's been a major blow-up.
Chris and his father.
Chris's father had a huge argument, and Chris has taken off. He's just off into the night, and they're all waiting for him to come back. They don't know if he's coming back for sure, and so there's just a lot of tension. Chris has left in a rage, an absolute rage, and they're concerned: is Chris even going to return? And if so, what's going to happen?
And this scene starts with. I might add that the other people in this cast are the neighbors on either side and the brother of the girlfriend. But the one neighbor is Jim Bayless, Dr. Jim Bayless, which is. In the show is played by Dave Tecto, who's doing a wonderful job. And Mr. Garner is going to read the part of Jim for us.
Any news?
No news.
You can't sit up all night, dear. Why don't you go to bed?
I'm waiting for Chris. Don't worry about me, Jim. I'm perfectly all right.
But it's almost 2:00.
I can't sleep. You had an emergency?
Yeah, somebody had a headache and thought he was dying. Half my patients are quite mad. Nobody realizes how many people are walking around loose and are cracked as coconuts. Money. Money, 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 money. You say it long enough, it doesn't mean anything. Oh, how I'd love to be around when that happens.
You're so childish, Jim. Sometimes you are.
Kate, what happened?
I told you, we had an argument with Joe, and then he got in the car and drove away.
What kind of an argument?
An argument. Joe, he was crying like a child before.
They argue about Annie?
No, not Anne. Imagine. She hasn't come out of that room since he left all night in that room.
What'd Joe do? Tell him?
Tell him what?
Don't be afraid, Kate. I know. I've always known.
How?
It occurred to me a long time ago.
I always had the feeling that in the back of his head, Chris almost knew. I didn't think it would be such a shock.
Chris would never know how to live with a thing like that. It takes a certain talent for lying. You have it, and I have it, but not him.
What do you mean? He's not coming back?
Oh, no. He'll come back. We all come back, Kate. These private little revolutions always die. The compromise is always made. In a peculiar way, Frank is right. Every man does have a star, the star of one's own honesty. And you spend your life groping for it. But once it's out, it never lights again. I don't think he went very far, Kate. He probably just wanted to be alone to watch his star go out.
Well, just as long as he comes back.
Oh, I wish he wouldn't, Kate. One year I simply took off, went to New Orleans. For 2 months I lived on bananas and milk and studied a certain disease. It was beautiful. And then she came and she cried. And I went back home with her. And now I live in the usual darkness. I can't find myself. It's even hard sometimes to remember the kind of man I wanted to be. I'm a good husband. Chris is a good son. He'll come back. I have a feeling he's in the park. I'll look around for him. Put her to bed, Joe. This is no good for what she's got.
What does he want here?
His friend is not home.
I don't like him mixing in so much.
It's too late, Joe. He knows.
How does he know?
He guessed a long time ago.
I don't like that.
What you don't like?
Yeah, what I don't like.
You can't bully yourself through this one, Joe. You better be smart now. This thing, it's not over yet.
And what is she doing up there? She doesn't come out of that room.
I don't know. What is she doing? Sit down and stop being mad. You want to live, you better figure out your life.
She don't know, does she?
She saw Chris storming out of here. It's 1-1. She knows how to add.
Maybe I ought to talk to her.
Don't ask me, Joe.
Then who do I ask? But I don't think she'll do anything about it.
You're asking me again.
I'm asking you. What am I, a stranger? I thought I had a family here. What happened to my family?
You've got a family. I'm simply telling you that I have no strength to think anymore.
You have no strength. The minute there's trouble, you have no strength.
Joe, you're doing the same thing again. All your life, whenever there's trouble, you yell at me and you think that settles it.
Then what do I do? Tell me. Talk to me. What do I do?
Joe, I've been thinking this way. If he comes back...
What do you mean, if? He's coming back.
I think if you sit him down and you explain yourself... I mean, you ought to make it clear to him that you know you did a terrible thing. I mean, if he saw that you realized what you did, you see?
What ice does that cut?
I mean, if you told him that you want to pay for what you did.
How can I pay?
Tell him you're willing to go to prison.
I'm willing
to... You wouldn't go. He wouldn't ask you to go, but if you told him you wanted to, if he could feel that you wanted to pay, maybe he'd forgive you.
He would forgive me? For what?
Joe, you know what I mean.
I don't know what you mean. You wanted money, so I made money. What must I be forgiven? You wanted money, didn't you?
I didn't want it that way.
Well, I didn't want it that way either. What difference is it what you want? I spoiled the both of you. I should have put him out when he was 10 like I was put out. Make him earn his keep. Then he'd know how a buck is made in this world. Forgiven. I could live on a quarter a day myself, but I got a family, so I...
Joe, it don't excuse that you did it for the family.
It's got to excuse me.
There's something bigger than the family to him.
Nothing is bigger.
There is to him.
There's nothing he could do that I wouldn't forgive, because he's my son. Because I'm his father and he's my son.
Joe, I'm telling you.
Nothing's bigger than that. And you're going to tell him, you understand? I'm his father and he's my son. And if there's something bigger than that, I'll put a bullet
now
in my head.
Now you stop that.
You heard me. Now you know what to tell him. But he wouldn't put me away, though. He wouldn't do that. Would he?
He loved you, Joe. You broke his heart.
But to put me away?
I don't know. I'm beginning to think we don't really know him. They say in the war he was such a killer, and here he's always been afraid of mice. I don't know. I don't know what he'll do.
Are we stopping there, we said?
Yeah. Yep. That gives you a taste of it.
That gives more than a taste, and by the looks of Sonny's script, that's right towards the end of the play.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have to sort of make some guesses here, and probably
well,
maybe we
guess.
Can guess, too. Yeah.
We can't give away too much.
No, it comes from Arthur Miller's All My Sons, first presented by Red Mask Players in Danville in 1953. Mm-hmm. And it's now going to be presented again in their 75th season, opening next Friday and running through the 19th of November at the Catherine Randolph Theater. For more information, you can go to redmaskplayers.com and get a little bit of history on the theater as well. The director of the show is Dave Downing, and our two official actors we heard are Sonny Downing and Nancy Henderson in the role of Joel and Kate Keller, and filling in for a couple of other of the 10 actors total, Gail Garner, who's also the stage manager for the show. Wish you all best of luck on the production. Yes.
Would like to add that we are doing some things in conjunction with the War Museum in Danville. The play runs over Veterans Day, and so in conjunction with the War Museum, we are doing some things to honor our veterans. So particularly Veterans Day, we'll be doing some special
things. On the November 11th performance day.
November 11th. Okay. RedMaskPlayers.com. Thank you all very much for coming in.
Thank you.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Stay tuned next for a conversation with Stephen Larson of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra. They're giving a concert called Variations on a Theme this coming Friday evening at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Our broadcast today on Live and Local is made possible with support from these business partners, Busey Bank, Bates Commodities of Normal, Inuka Incorporated of Fairmount, and A-Plus Farms Limited of Pine Village. These business partners join the Friends of WYLL in making great programs possible, and we thank you for your support. Called Get Up Kid with the Wilders, who were fairly recently performing live on our radio show here. That was one of their lower key tunes. The ones they played for us live were on the decidedly energetic side. And you're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our program's made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, welcoming the Tokyo Quartet and pianist Alon Goldstein on Saturday, October 29th, that's this Saturday. More information is at krannertcenter.com. On Friday at the Krannert Center, it's the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra giving the first of their classics concerts this season, called Variations on a Theme, for very good reason. And here to give us those reasons and tell us a bit about the soloist and more is Stephen Larson, who's music director of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra for the a final year, one more go round, Steve.
That's right. Gonna try to get it right this time.
How many years have you had to get it right?
I think this is 17.
17. Well, yeah. maybe this will be the one.
That's right.
Variations on a theme. Let me guess. There's some tunes on with having to do with variations.
They all are theme and variations. As a matter of fact, we start with Benjamin Britten's. This is one of these pieces that doesn't get played a whole lot anymore, it seems. It was very popular at one time. And it doesn't get done a whole lot on classics concerts, on adult concerts, because the perception is, well, it's a kid's piece. Well, it is and it isn't. The Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra was written in 1946 with narration, optional narration, as an introduction to the instruments of the orchestra by Benjamin Britten. But it stands very well by itself. It's a very colorful, very well-written piece, as virtually everything is by Britten, that starts out with a fairly well-known tune. It's probably most well-known because of its use in the Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra, but a theme by Henry Purcell that forms the basis of the theme and variations. And unlike a lot of theme and variations, it's stated five times at the beginning, first by the whole orchestra, then by the woodwinds, then by the brass, then by the percussion, and finally by the whole orchestra again, before setting off into the theme of the set of variations in which every group of the orchestra, every section, gets its own particular variations on the theme, before finally joining together with a grand fugue at the end, in which the theme is finally reprised. It's a really neat piece. A lot of fun to play and challenging for the players, and I think fun for people to listen to. That leads us into our second piece, which is a piece which is almost never done. And I'm really surprised. Well, I think I know why. The variations on a nursery theme or on a Kinderlied, as the original title, a children's song, by Ernst von Dohnányi, it's a piece that requires a substantial amount of commitment by the pianist, even though it's not a piano concerto. It's more of a piano concertante. The pianist is an equal to the orchestra rather than the featured instrument. But if you are a pianist that's out playing your repertoire of concertos out on the orchestra concert circuit, this is a fairly substantial amount of investment of time and energy you have to put into this for a piece that maybe is not going to get played a whole lot. And it's really a shame because it's really a fun, fun piece. It starts out with this very Mahlerian, that's Mahlerian as in Mahler, not as in malaria, Wagnerian, very portentous, ominous introduction that seems to be hinting of great apocalyptic calamities, and after fading out and bringing the audience back to attention with a great crash, the theme comes in, and there's nothing else, none other than the what we know as Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, in C major of all things, played first by the piano and then joined by the orchestra. And the set of variations that follows are really ingenious, but delightful, and really are designed to trigger of instant of memories, instant recognition in the audience members of all of the great composers who were known at the time this piece was written, 1914. You'll hear little tributes to Brahms, to Tchaikovsky, to Strauss, a little Also sprach Zarathustra moment in there, Beethoven. Who else? There's even the little Resnicek Donna Diana overture quote in the finale. All of this done in a very sort of a tongue-in-cheek manner, but very artfully. As a matter of fact, the subtitle of the piece is, if I can remember this correctly now, for the delight of those who, for the delight of humorous people and for the annoyance of all others.
Well, I remember from hearing, you know, we don't play this piece much at all either on the radio, mostly because of the beginning. Because it's one of those where if you don't know what's coming or you're not trapped in a seat, so to speak, in the middle of a concert, you might run away because it sounds so forbidding and foreboding and, oh, this is going to be a horrible piece of modern music that I'm not going to like.
Yeah, it's very much like the opening to the last movement of Mahler's Resurrection Symphony, you know, the sort of visions of the apocalypse, the last judgment kind of a theme. And finally, when it all subsides, then the theme comes in, and you just can't help but smile very broadly at that point because, oh, have I had one put over on me up till now?
Well, before we'll give some examples of that in a little bit. I want to go back actually to the first piece before we even hear what the third set of variations is that's on the program, which is one that gets played more often in concerts, I think, though not so much on this radio station either for some reason. Here's that opening that you described so well from Benjamin Britten's Young Person's Guide. And actually, before I play it, do you know which is the first title? I mean, usually the piece, it's listed on recordings as The Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra, but the other title is Variations and Fugue on a Theme of Purcell.
I believe that's the subtitle.
The second one.
Yes. The formal title of the piece that Britten gave it was The Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra.
So he did have intend for it to be used.
Yes. As a matter of fact, it was dedicated to the children, four children of friends of his.
Hmm. And I hope they got to hear the piece.
I think that they did.
And learned well.
1946 was the premiere with the London Symphony.
And this is the BBC Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Andrew Davis. Music by Benjamin Britten that will open the concert on Friday night at the Krannert Center by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra. The concert is called Variations on a Theme. Getting a little taste of the variations on a nursery song by Ernst von Dohnányi in a performance here by the composer at the piano with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Sir Adrian Bolt. And the pianist for Friday night's concert by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony will be Timothy Allen, who is... Timothy Allen. I don't think he's made the sir just yet. Well, maybe it's Sir Stephen Larson. We should be saying that.
No.
Yeah, Sir Steve is over here making funny here on Live and Local. Tim Allen is a professor, a mere professor at University of Illinois
School of Music. Professor Dr. Tim Allen.
Tim Allen. And he happens to be a really good pianist.
Yes.
Have you worked with him yet?
No, we first time tonight. We've run through the piece together in the studio, but Tonight will be the first rehearsal.
Yeah, so that's always an adventure.
Yeah.
Did you have to twist his arm to do this piece? You were saying earlier that for touring pianists, it can be a lot of work for not too many performances.
I didn't twist his arm. I suggested it to him, and he thought it was a good idea, which I was really grateful for. I didn't have to twist.
Yeah, well, that's great, because it's a cool piece, often fun piece, as you just heard in some of these variations. Well, we're going to hear a little bit of the last piece in just a moment, and I'll let you give a preamble to it, Steve, after I tell our listeners a few other events you can go out and see and hear live in our listening area over the next couple of days. The Peoria Civic Center Theater continues to present the musical Wicked that runs for a couple of weeks yet. Tonight's performance is at 7:30, and tomorrow night's as well, and they do give other performances at odd times. You can check their website for more information. The Eric Lund Quintet plays jazz at the Iron Post in Urbana this evening at 7 o'clock. It's the Full Monty at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, Illinois, 7:30 tonight through Friday. Louder and Manning play folk music at the State House Inn in Springfield this evening at 5:30. It's the Illinois Wesleyan University New Music Cafe at Westbrook Auditorium on the IWU campus in Bloomington tomorrow evening at 7:30. A guest artist recital by pianist Reed Alexander at Eastern Illinois University's Recital Hall in the Dowden Fine Arts Center in Charleston tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. And the Jazz Combos at Eastern perform in the Black Box Theater there tomorrow night, 7:30. University of Illinois Wind Symphony has a concert at the Cranert Center in Urbana tomorrow evening at 7:30. And the U of I Jazz Combos, one of the Jazz Combos, is at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. Muhammad Seymour High School is presenting The Curious Savage. It's a play in Muhammad tomorrow at 7:30 and Friday as well. And Kevin Stearns is at Swinger's Grill in Normal tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. Support for our show today comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. So the last piece on this variations program, Steve, is one that, for reasons I really don't fathom, we almost never play on our radio station.
Really?
I don't understand it. But it does get played on orchestra concerts.
Yeah, and almost every movement is wonderful to listen to.
Yeah.
It's a doubly fascinating work. First of all, it's a great piece of music.
And it is.
The Edward Elgar's Enigma Variations, or Variations on an Enigmatic Theme. And it's doubly great because it's, first of all, it's a wonderful piece of music, but secondly, he never let on what the enigma was.
We still don't know.
Nobody knows. He went to his grave, and much has been written and guessed about what the secret is, what the enigma is, the theme that goes unplayed. And I won't even get into that here, but Norman Del Mar said, you know, it would be a terrible thing if people did find out what the secret was, because this piece would be much less interesting.
Well, you'd have to change the name.
That's right.
Because it's not an enigma anymore.
But it's a glorious piece of music, right? At turn of the century, 1898, 1899, sort of the fading glory of the British Empire. Everything is all represented here. It's just a beautiful piece.
And each of the variations named after or named for or written for some friend or acquaintance of his.
Right. This is well known. Each variation has initials or some attribution. It's a musical portrait of his friends, and his wife is in there too.
And there is, about 13 variations. So you have the theme, 13 variations, and then a finale, which is a variation to somebody. Is this the one that's to his wife?
No, EDU is kind of an acronym for Edu, which was his nickname.
His wife
called him Edu, yes.
We don't know why, probably, or maybe we do. Eddie.
We don't, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're going to hear a bit of the finale. We're kind of going to give away the end, but you're going to have to go and hear everything in between to the concert on, Friday night with the Champaign-Urbana Symphony. Steve Larson, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
And Steve is in his final year as music director of the CUSO. The concert starts at 7:30 at the Kranert Center in Urbana. You're listening to 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR, Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, and we thank all of our listeners who supported us during our just-completed Fall Pledge Drive. I'm Kevin Kelly, and it's Live and Local.